It is nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Stories we'll be covering this afternoon: another COVID case in Kodiak. The Coast Guard rescues hunters. Dan Sullivan has something to tweet about. Department of Agriculture is considering changes in the Tongass National Forest. And more about the fatal bear attack in the St. Elias National Forest. It's 50 degrees in Kodiak. Look for these kind of weather conditions that we've been having to continue.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A historic day in the domed U.S. Capitol, where Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg became the first woman as well as the first Jewish American to lie in state. After 2 days of public viewing at the U.S. Supreme Court, her flag-draped casket was carried across the street to the Capitol today.
Ready, stop! Ready, stop!
Congress's top Democrats were present for a private ceremony in the Capitol. The two top Republicans were not. President Trump's getting ready to announce a nominee tomorrow to fill the vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. The Democrats accused the GOP of blatant hypocrisy for pushing a confirmation vote before this election after Senate Republicans denied a hearing on President Obama's nominee 4 years ago. Restaurants, bars, and other businesses across Florida are now cleared to run at full capacity, even though the coronavirus is still a significant threat. Governor Ron DeSantis announced today he was lifting all statewide restrictions and leaving it up to local authorities and businesses to do the right thing. The decision is likely to draw more protests from critics who've accused DeSantis, a Trump supporter, of playing politics with people's lives. Here's NPR's Greg Allen.
Up to now, restaurants and bars in Florida could serve customers indoors at just 50% of their capacity. Governor Ron DeSantis says his new executive order will lift that restriction statewide, although local governments can keep additional limits in place if they're justified.
Every business has the right to operate. You know, some of the locals may be able to, they can do reasonable regulations, but you can't just say no.
Miami-Dade and other counties in South Florida currently have locally imposed limits on the hours restaurants and bars can operate and on how many customers they can serve indoors. DeSantis says the number of coronavirus cases has dropped steadily since the peak in July, even as economic activity has picked up and businesses have reopened with restrictions in place. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
172 members of Congress have signed a U.S. House resolution that condemns unnecessary medical procedures that have allegedly been performed on immigrant women without their consent. Georgia Public Broadcasting's Ellen Eldridge says a delegation heads to Georgia tomorrow.
Members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus and the House Judiciary Committee are investigating Georgia's Erwin County Detention Center in person tomorrow. They say it's a priority to ensure safe conditions of immigrants in U.S. custody, and that they've already raised the alarm about the spread of COVID-19 in detention centers in Texas and Nevada. In addition to recent allegations of unwanted medical procedures, more than 40 cases of COVID-19 have been confirmed at the Georgia facility in recent months. Members of Congress will hold a press call after their inspection to share their oversight findings with the public. For NPR News, I'm Ellen Eldridge in Atlanta.
This is NPR News. A federal judge in California is ordering an extension of the 2020 census count until October 31st, a move that blocks the Trump administration from ending the nationwide tally early and allows more time for accuracy. The Department of Justice is expected to appeal. Pope Francis has fired a top-ranking cardinal, accusing him of embezzlement and nepotism. NPR's Sylvia Pajoli reports a cardinal took the unusual step of holding a press conference to deny wrongdoing.
Sitting in front of a giant silver crucifix in a religious institute in Rome, Cardinal Angelo Becciu described to reporters what he called his surreal meeting with the Pope on Thursday. He said Francis told him, "I no longer have trust in you," after receiving information from Vatican and Italian magistrates charging that Becciu had embezzled hundreds of thousands of euros in Vatican funds. The Pope ordered Becciu to resign his Vatican post and took away his rights as a cardinal, including electing pontiffs. Becciu admitted he had sent money to his home diocese in Sardinia to be used by an NGO that assists migrants and is headed by his brother. But he insisted this was fully in line with his duties to use donations for charity. Sylvia Poggioli, NPR News.
An attack near the former offices of the satirical newspaper Charlie Hebdo is now being investigated as an act of terrorism in France. Today, French police say at least two people were stabbed. Two suspects have been arrested. The former Charlie Hebdo offices were the site of an Islamist extremist attack in 2015, in which 12 people were killed. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from Atlassian, makers of collaboration software like Jira and Trello. 83% of Fortune 500 companies use Atlassian to help teams stay agile, aligned, and connected. Learn more at Atlassian.com.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
There's another travel-related Kodiak Island case of COVID-19. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization says this latest report involves a resident who recently traveled and is now in isolation. Public officials have identified this person's close contacts and will remain in touch to ensure self-isolation and self-care. The total number of cases associated with the Kodiak Island borough since the first one was identified in April is now 74. Two are currently classified as active locally. The Coast Guard mounted a rescue operation on Thursday to save two hunters stranded on Mount Kelly. A C-130 Hercules aircraft was deployed from Coast Guard Air Station Kodiak's forward operating location in Kotzebue ahead of an MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter to locate the hunters. Watchstanders in the 17th District Command Center in Juneau received the request from Alaska State Troopers for an agency assist at noon. The hunters reported 70-mile-per-hour winds that prevented a commercial transporter from picking the hunters up. The two hunters, who had been stranded on Mount Kelly for 6 days, were dropped off at Kotzebue Airport. On-scene weather at the time of the rescue was air temperature 25 degrees, 30-mile-per-hour winds, and a 17-mile visibility. U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan is tweeting up to oppose the Pebble Mine. He issued a tweet yesterday evening saying, "Let me be even more clear, I oppose the Pebble Mine, no Pebble Mine," unquote. Sullivan came out against the mine last month, too. He said then he agreed with an agency decision that a permit could not be issued, but that statement was nearly buried among paragraphs stressing his support for resource extraction. The new tweet is more declarative. It comes after Pebble executives were caught on tape saying Sullivan was helping them by staying in a corner and keeping quiet. Senator Lisa Murkowski reposted Sullivan's tweet last night. She added three heart emojis and a video of salmon leaping upstream. Anti-Pebble activists said it was a start. Lindsey Bloom of Salmon State said senators conveyed their position with legislative action, not tweets. On Thursday, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced that it is forging ahead with a proposal to make the Tongass National Forest fully exempt from a Clinton-era rule designed to limit road development on federal lands. It's known as the Roadless Rule, and successive Alaska governors and the state's congressional delegation have pushed to make it not apply in the Tongass. Proponents say exempting the Tongass would allow for more mining, communications, and renewable energy projects on federal land. It could also open up more areas for logging, although advocates and opponents seem to agree that the impact on the timber industry would likely be minimal. But many Alaska natives worry that rolling back the rule would damage areas tribal members use for hunting, fishing, and foraging. Nearly 200 people testified at 18 hearings last year, specifically geared towards people who rely on the forest for their way of life, and large majority supported keeping the rule in place, according to the U.S. Forest Service. 9 federally recognized tribal governments asked the USDA to restart the rulemaking process in July, saying federal officials have brushed aside Alaskan Natives' concerns. An internal Forest Service report notes that 96% of public comments received on the issue last fall supported leaving the rule in place. Approximately 1% supported a full exemption. The final environmental impact statement was released Thursday afternoon. That starts a 30-day waiting period before the USDA can issue a final decision on the roadless rule for the Tongass National Forest. The pandemic has caused an increase in people enrolling in Medicaid. That's true across the country and in Alaska, too. In the last 6 months, more than 12,000 people have joined the program in this state.
In Alaska, Medicaid is known as Denali Care and Denali Kid Care, and it's covering more Alaskans than ever, nearly 1 in 3 state residents, including most children. The biggest concentration of new enrollees has been among young adults. Darren McKnight is one of them. A 30-year-old Ketchikan resident, McKnight enrolled in the program in May. If this was a normal summer, he would have probably been able to find work as an experienced cook, and that could have paid his healthcare costs. But this isn't a normal summer.
Tourism taking the hit that it has in Ketchikan was definitely the last nail in the coffin.
Receiving Medicaid has provided assurance for McKnight. It paid for 2 COVID tests, which came back negative. And it's allowed him to receive mental health treatment that he described as life-saving.
Plenty of folks are losing jobs. Plenty of folks are losing insurance. I'm sure a lot of people are getting a lot of the help that they really need.
Alaska's Medicaid enrollment increase has been more than 5%. That's actually a smaller increase than most states have reported. Some of the groups that are signing up fastest in Alaska are women and people who live in northern, western, and southwest Alaska. Job loss is a big reason for the increase, but it's not the only one. Medicaid enrollment usually has a churn to it. People are constantly joining and leaving, but that's not happening now. No one's leaving because the federal government has prevented the state from dropping people during the pandemic. Right now, that's benefiting the state's bottom line. The federal government is paying for a larger share of the cost for most Medicaid enrollees. But in return, the state can only end Medicaid for people who've died, moved out of the state, or asked to be removed. Shonda O'Brien oversees Medicaid enrollment as the director of the State Division of Public Assistance.
The intent is really to keep more people eligible during the pandemic and not have folks without health care.
This isn't the first time Alaska has seen Medicaid enrollment jump. Just 5 years ago, Medicaid was expanded under the Affordable Care Act, and enrollment went up. But that increase was accompanied by a significant backlog of people waiting to get into the program, which at one point reached 27,000. It hasn't happened this time. O'Brien says a quick response to the pandemic, including from state staff working from home, has contributed to that.
So from the time an application comes into the office and the time that a staff person takes a look at that application is usually within 3 days.
But more patients means more need for healthcare services. The impact on providers has varied across Alaska. Some providers are seeing more patients, with different types of services required as a result of COVID-19. Carol Osterman is the executive director and CEO of the Kodiak Community Health Center.
We are definitely seeing an increase in the number of patients that we're seeing right now. They're COVID-related, and we're doing a large increase in testing.
In addition, there's been a big shift in how the center is serving patients. Before the pandemic, only 1 out-of-state psychiatric nurse practitioner was providing remote telehealth care. Now, all of the Kodiak Center's providers provide telehealth care. While more Alaskans are covered by Medicaid, it's not yet clear if the state will have to spend more money on the program, which is the second largest in the state's budget after public education. But the Department of Health and Social Services says Medicaid spending in the first 11 weeks of the state budget that started in July is on track with what the state projected. Even if the enrollment increase doesn't directly cause a spending problem, the state faces another Medicaid budget challenge on the horizon. The increased federal match could end in December, but that's only if the federal government doesn't extend the national public health emergency, which is scheduled to expire on October 23rd. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The National Park Service has released additional information about a fatal grizzly bear attack in the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park and Preserve on Sunday. The NPS identifies the victim as 22-year-old Austin Pfeiffer of Ohio. An NPS release says Pfeiffer and his partner were on an unguided moose hunt in the remote Cottonwood Creek drainage within the preserve, where permitted sport hunting is allowed. The attack site is about 50 air miles from the eastern interior village of Northway in what the Park Service described as mixed tundra and forest with dense vegetation. Park spokesperson Janice Maslin says the hunters had killed a moose on Saturday and were butchering and packing the meat to camp Sunday when they split up.
The partner returned to camp with a load while Pfeiffer prepared the next load. And when Pfeiffer's partner returned to within about 50 yards of the harvest site, he was charged by a bear. And in self-defense, he did shoot in the direction of the bear several times with his sidearm. And when the bear came within about 20 feet of him, it did flinch as if shot, and it then veered and ran off.
Maslin says the partner then found Pfeiffer dead from what appeared to be a surprise attack.
There was no evidence that he was carrying a firearm or deterrent with him at the time, so he was unable to defend himself.
Maslin says it's the first known fatal bear attack in the park since it was created in 1980. She says the partner called the air service that had flown the men in for the hunt and reported what had happened. The partner was flown out, and the NPS and state wildlife troopers traveled to the site on Monday and recovered Pfeiffer's body, which was taken to the state medical examiner in Anchorage for an autopsy. The NPS says there was no evidence that the bear was still in the area and that no visitors are known to be in the vicinity. Ute Commuter Service is suing its former business manager for embezzling company funds to pay for personal expenses, pay raises, and bonuses. KYUK's Christy Schauenberger has more.
Wade Renfro co-owns Ute Commuter Service, and he first spotted unusual spending on the company credit card in June of this year. That's according to attorney Myron Engsman, who is representing Ute in the lawsuit filed against former Ute business manager Nathan McCabe. McCabe also managed another Bethel business for Renfro, Riverside Apartments. Renfro confronted McCabe about the charges. McCabe was in Anchorage at the time, and by the end of the month, McCabe resigned from his position as business manager. The complaint, filed September 22nd, alleges that McCabe used company bank accounts and credit cards for personal expenses, like paying his rent and giving himself pay raises and bonuses and reimbursements, as well as inflating the compensation of another employee. The lawsuit includes two other people related to McCabe who allegedly benefited from his misuse of those funds: his wife, Christina Smith, and a relative of McCabe's who worked at Riverside Apartments. Attorney Myron Engsman says it took him and his clients a while to gather the information needed to file the lawsuit. For example, going over credit card statements and bank account history. McCabe started working at Ute and Riverside in 2017 as assistant business manager and was promoted to business manager in 2019. The lawsuit is seeking $100,000 in damages, but Engsman says the amount McCabe embezzled could exceed that amount. So far, no criminal charges have been filed against McCabe. For KYUK News, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
The COVID-19 pandemic has cost the Alaska Marine Highway System tens of millions of dollars in revenue from lost ridership. That's according to Rob Carpenter, the Department of Transportation's deputy commissioner, speaking Thursday at the Southeast Conference.
We've had roughly a $45 million revenue, unrealized revenue impact since this all began. And that was, you know, right away we had to tie ships up. And this, the unfortunate part was we were just getting ships back online from all the mechanical we had.
He's referring to the breakdown of several vessels last winter, including the Matanuska ferry at the beginning of the year. That was the sole mainliner the state had running. Regional service resumed in March, but then came COVID-19.
Villages and communities locked down. They didn't want us to come. We couldn't come. We had to get our mitigation plans figured out. Anyway, we're running now, and everything's going great, but we're still, ridership is significantly down, and our revenue is significantly impacted for what we had based our budget off of. So that has led into our winter schedule, which is, I think, at a level no one is happy with, including us, but the service level, but that's what we can afford at this time.
A 9-person Marine Highway work group created by Governor Dunleavy is expected to release its recommendation for the fleet's future next week. The task force has already ruled out privatization or any scenario where the state gives the fleet away. Carpenter says DOT awaits the report.
We have a commitment to the Marine Highway system. We are by no means looking to get rid of it. We realize that it's an extension of the highway system in this state, and we fully support it, and we're looking forward to something we can cling on to that we can move forward and build off of.
His remarks came during the annual meeting of the Southeast Conference, a regional civic and business forum held virtually this year.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardiner's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. As salmon season ends, more fisheries get underway. More after this.
Fish Radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. Online at alaskaboat.com.
Salmon numbers continue to trickle in, but the total catch won't add up to much more than the 113 million fish taken so far. That's about 85% of what state managers expected for the season. Of that, over 45 million are sockeyes and 58 million are pinks. Landings of about 2 million coho are the lowest since the mid-1970s, and a 7.5 million chum salmon harvest is the weakest since 1979. Chinook volumes also are well below historical levels. The preliminary value of Bristol Bay's 40.7 million salmon catch, nearly all sockeyes, is $140.7 million, ranking ninth in the last 20 years. That doesn't include any post-season price bonuses. At Southeast Alaska, beam trawlers are back on the water, targeting pinks and side-stripe shrimp in a third opener. Southeast's Dungeness fishery reopens on October 1st. On October 5th, 100 or more divers also could be heading down for over 1.7 million pounds of red sea cucumbers. A catch of more than 3.5 million sea urchins also is up for grabs, but there are reportedly no buyers. Southeast divers also are targeting giant gooey duck clams. Kodiak crabbers are still pulling up Dungeness, and a sea cucumber fishery opens on October 1st with a 130,000-pound limit. Halibut landings have topped 12 million pounds, 75% of the 16-million-pound catch limit, and as always, fisheries for cod, pollock, flounders, and much more are ongoing in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. Finally, the State Board of Fisheries has accepted 275 proposals for its upcoming meetings on Prince William Sound and Southeast fisheries and statewide shellfish. The board will consider new meeting dates at an October 15 and 16 work session. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMSI instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 41, date issued September 21st at 10 a.m. There will be a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 22nd, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 25th, in the following areas. In the Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Afognak District, except for the outer Katoy Bay and Izua Bay sections, remain open until further notice, and the inner Katoy Bay section remains closed. The mainland district, the Sheratine Bay, Anton Larsen Bay, Kijuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiriton Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the northwest Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice. The Outer Katoy Bay section and Izuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Humpy Dead Man, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. Until further notice, in that portion of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations, and statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Tune in tonight at 6 p.m. for Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation's annual membership meeting. It won't be as boring as that sounds. MCs will be General Manager Mike Wall and Board Chair Melissa Whitveen. Learn how the organization adapted to continue providing news and entertainment during the pandemic and what the corporation sees for its future. If you have comments or questions before or during the meeting, please email Pam, P-A-M, at kmxt.org. Again, that's tonight at 6 p.m. on KMXT. The Kodiak Island Ambulatory Care Clinic is now offering 15-minute rapid COVID-19 testing. To make an appointment, call them at 486-6188. All testing is performed outside the clinic office in their handy red-top tent or from your vehicle. The Chamber of Commerce is pleased to announce the confirmation of Alaska U.S. senatorial candidate debate between Senator Dan Sullivan and Dr. Al Gross. The fisheries-themed debate will occur on October 10th. In atypical manner, the debate will take place over Zoom and be live-streamed on the KodiakChamber.com website, as well as ComFishAK.com, and also on their Facebook and YouTube channels. Also, you can tune in right here on KMXT and through statewide public radio networks. The moderator will be Rhonda McBride.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on public radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.